I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
A road, a plaza, an apartment, and a taxi. The settings are different, but the stories are the same. The scenes of fatal gun violence across Toronto. 2 days marred by 8 shootings, claiming 4 lives. Good evening. Officers descending on several city streets in rapid succession.
This weekend's sudden climb in crime being called callous and unprecedented for the GTA. CTV's Janice Golding is live near Pharmacy in Eglinton. And Janice, that's where a taxi driver was shot and killed.
That's right, Nathan. If you take a look behind us here, you may be able to see a portion of the fence that came down when the driver's taxi crashed into it. We were told that the driver had been shot, but the first people who came to his assistance didn't realize it at the time.
The 911 calls came in just after 9 last night after a taxi crashed into a fence at Pharmacy in Eglinton. Passersby tried to help the driver, telling police they thought the man had been stabbed.
When officers arrived on scene, they believed that those injuries were gunshot wounds. We did find evidence of gunfire in the cab.
The driver's death striking fear into some cab drivers.
We put a knife on my neck.
They described the anxiety of working the night shift.
I wouldn't drive nights anymore. No.
No.
Very scary. Very scary.
It's really, really dangerous. That's all I can say. And we need help from the city, the police, you know.
This weekend's bloodshed started early Saturday morning. At 12:36 a.m., 28-year-old Kamal Daly was killed at a plaza at Jane and Yorkwood's Gate. At 2:20 a.m., 36-year-old Donald DeRoy Smokey Marson was shot dead in an Eglinton and Keele apartment. At 3:42 p.m., a man was killed outside a Highway 401 in Weston Plaza. At 3 a.m. Sunday, a 17-year-old was shot in a drive-by on Highway 427. 2 hours later, a woman walked into a hospital with gunshot wounds. At 7:45 a.m., a man was shot at an Eglinton and Oakwood restaurant. At 8:22 p.m., a man was shot multiple times at Parliament and Wellesley. And at 9:05 p.m., a man was killed in his cab at Pharmacy and Eglinton.
Unprecedented spike, so we've never seen it before. These numbers I'm used to hearing from Chicago News.
And Lewis Marsh, the founder of the Zero Gun Violence Movement, says he doesn't expect the violence to stop given there's often retaliation in response to a shooting.
The brazenness and the callousness of the shooting these days is fueling a type of violence that we have never seen before.
People in the community say more needs to be done to keep everyone safe.
I think there's a lack of visibility of police that might help the situation, but it's dangerous for all of us.
Because if someone gets shot and die right here, what's going to happen to me? I don't know if I'm safe to come here or not.
Meanwhile, taxi drivers are mourning one of their own.
Very upset, yeah, very upset. Sorry for his family, you know, because most cab drivers have families. You know, you have families to feed.
Beck Taxi, the man's employer, issued a tweet today saying, "Our hearts are broken," adding, "We would like to extend our sincerest condolences to the family who has suffered an unimaginable loss after the death of someone they love. Our hearts are with them today."
Now, police say they are investigating each of these 8 shootings individually, although they will be looking for links between the victims, the suspects, and any suspect vehicles. Reporting live, I'm Janice Golding. Now back to Nathan.
All right, thank you, Janice. Turning to the day so many businesses across the province have been waiting for, the lifting of limits. More customers allowed back inside.
But the doors aren't swinging open everywhere. While the rules may be loosening, some of the challenges are tightening. CTV's Sean Lethong is live with more on this. Sean.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, this is the day when businesses can operate at 100% capacity, but some are choosing not to, while others say they don't have the staff.
Inside Mars Diner near Yonge and Eglinton, the lunch rush is a little bigger than a regular Monday.
Very excited to have this place jam-packed and not have to tell customers that they have to, you know, socially distance.
And that means co-owner Thevian Marhezran is hustling. Because this is the first day where businesses who require proof of vaccination can operate at 100% capacity. And customers are coming back.
I feel great. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Jan O'Connor is back for the first time since the pandemic began.
It's fabulous because
We've been isolated, so isolated. And now all of a sudden we're free to go out and speak to people, see friends, do whatever, except I wouldn't go to a gym.
At Sweat and Tonic Fitness Studio, they are welcoming more customers back.
We're ready. You know, everybody's been coming to the gym already for months now, and I mean, I'm comfortable with it.
But rather than ramp up to 100%, they're only offering classes at 75% capacity.
It's been a year and a half of 50% capacity or, you know, not even seeing people, so just kind of letting people ease back into it.
So while there are some businesses who are choosing not to go to 100% capacity, there are others who aren't able to. While businesses that require proof of vaccination, like gyms and restaurants, can choose to operate at full capacity, places that don't require proof of vaccination, like hair salons, must opt into the program in order to operate at full capacity. At Runway Hair Studio, they would like to open up fully.
If we get people to work, yes, we're going to go full capacity.
Owner Angelo Scarfo says they cannot find enough staff to take care of all the customers.
It's only 3 people working, so we can get so many.
So while they may want 100% capacity, in some cases the new reality is holding business back. So this is part of the recovery, but it's evident today that the recovery may be longer than just one day of raising the limits. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. I'll send it back inside.
Thank you, Sean. And as businesses and customers settle into this phase of the reopening, attention is already turning to what comes next.
Have you been asked to show your vaccine QR code yet? Turns out it may not be a requirement in the long run. CTV's Queens Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Hey, Nathan, January 17th, that's when the Ford government says proof of vaccination requirements will be dropped in Ontario for bars, restaurants and gyms, meaning the vaccinated and unvaccinated can dine together in a restaurant on that date. And some say the government is giving the anti-vaxxers a free pass. With capacity now lifted, the countdown is on until proof of vaccination is no longer a requirement in Ontario. The Ford government announced last week the province is planning to lift the vaccine passport rules beginning January 17th, less than 4 months after they first began.
For me personally, it feels awfully soon, given that the certificates only just came into place in the last couple of weeks, and we only received the QR code version about a week ago.
The province's science advisory table says the time is right to remove capacity, as Ontario keeps a tight lid on COVID-19 transmission. But it only works, they say, with some public health measures still in place.
Some of the core public health measures that have been very effective, masking, vaccine certificates, encouraging vaccination.
Which is why some politicians say it's odd that the government has firm dates in place.
I think it's premature to set arbitrary dates. I think those dates should be determined by what the science is telling us and what the spread of COVID looks like at those particular moments in time.
The Minister of Health says the government wanted to give businesses a roadmap to plan, but said if it doesn't go the government's way, the province may pivot yet again.
We have the plan set out. We may need to change it, but as far as things are right now, we are moving forward.
The Ford government's critics say there is a larger issue, that the province may have inadvertently given the vaccine-hesitant population a countdown because the consequences for not being vaccinated conclude on January 17th.
And having a date there, I think, provides them that reassurance that they don't need to get vaccinated.
The health minister is acknowledging the situation.
That is an issue, of course, but I think that people that are not intending to get the vaccination, the specific date isn't going to really make that much of a difference to them.
But giving businesses certainty, the minister says, is important. So those who want to remain unvaccinated now have to wait it out 84 days before those restrictions are removed. The chief medical officer of health said on Friday that in January, he wants to examine the transmission data coming out of the Christmas holidays and the school winter break before making a decision as to whether or not to remove the proof of vaccination restriction on the 17th of January. At Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you, Colin. And a reminder, our online team is keeping track of every step of Ontario's reopening plan. Visit ctvnewstoronto.ca for a complete breakdown of the changes taking effect today and in the weeks ahead. Many can relate around this time of day, off the clock from work, but not fully out the door. The phone or computer always close by for that call or email.
The province setting up policies for a so-called right to disconnect, although what that looks like in practice is largely unproven. CTV's Raheem Ladani is in the studio with more on this tonight. Raheem.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, it's called the Working for Workers Act and is being touted as a way to create a clear line between professional and personal lives. But if it would actually help is up for debate.
It's a common sight. People tied to their phones, constantly connected to work during and after hours.
If you go look at the email, there are 100 things that are going to come into your mind, and you're going to start thinking about it, you're going to process it, then you're going to take an action on it. So that also takes and consumes a lot of time and energy.
The Ontario government wants to give that energy back to workers with a legal right to unplug.
When you're off the clock, you're off the clock.
Under new legislation, employers with 25 or more employees would need to develop a right to disconnect policy. It could include when workers respond to emails and turning on out-of-office notifications when not working.
Certainly this is an issue that's been really highlighted because of the pandemic. I mean, the lines between family time and work time have been blurred.
But some experts say the policy could actually end up hurting employees.
It's going to play havoc with the rights of employees to work from home because employers are then going to be wanting a more systematized workday, which is inconsistent with the working from home model.
France enacted similar legislation in 2017, but the vague law has seen minor success. Ontario would be the first province in the country to implement the measure, but there's also a belief it could influence who an employer hires if they know the worker is logging off.
If I knew an employee was behaving that way, consistent with this new law, I would be hiring that employee, nor would any other company.
The government hasn't outlined penalties for companies that don't follow the policy.
Now, also in the legislation is a ban on non-compete agreements. The government says makes it difficult for people to explore other opportunities. It would also ease barriers such as Canadian experience requirements for internationally trained individuals to get licensed in a profession that matches their qualifications. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
And just ahead, from potholes to piles of snow, what are your legal rights to sue a city? The recent court decision you'll want to hear about as the temperatures start to drop. And speaking of the weather, if you manage to stay dry out there today, good for you. It's just one of those wet Mondays, Michelle. Is it still raining?
Oh, yes. We do have showers, of course, in the Toronto area. And we're going to continue to see that risk, not only through the overnight period, but into the day tomorrow, though things will sort of be tapering off somewhat in terms of amounts. Taking a look at our satellite and radar imagery, heaviest rain is to the north of us right now, actually extending right from around Kincardine in a line northeast towards Barrie. But we will still see some more showers, as I mentioned, later on under a special weather statement still. 30 to 50 millimeters total for areas in the yellow, 40 to 60 in the rainfall warning in southwestern Ontario. Temperatures pretty much staying steady in within a degree or two all day. Right now we're at 8 at the island, 7 at Pearson, heading to 6 degrees with gusty winds overnight. Back to you.
Thanks, Michelle. Next to the investigation into a fatal rollover crash in Brock involving a group of teenagers.
One of them was killed, and as CTV's Mike Walker reports, the weekend tragedy is being felt by many.
A small memorial is growing on the site of a rural road in Brock Township, the site of a crash that left one teen dead and 6 other teens in hospital with serious injuries. Vanessa Rossano, leaving flowers, she knew some of the teens involved.
I have no words. It's very sad. And I couldn't imagine.
It happened just after 12:30 Sunday morning on Sideline 18. Durham police say a southbound pickup truck with 7 teens on board rolled over into the ditch. 4 passengers were ejected. A 15-year-old boy from Sunderland was killed. The 17-year-old driver and 5 other passengers between 15 and 17 were airlifted to hospitals in Toronto.
2 of them are in critical condition, and the other 4 had serious injuries but are now recovering.
The driver of the pickup truck was a 17-year-old girl. Police have not yet confirmed what class of license she had and whether she was legally allowed to be driving at that time. Investigators are looking at whether speed or alcohol may have been factors.
How many seat belts are within that vehicle? How many passengers can it occupy? Also, whether or not they were inside of that vehicle or on the outside. These are all questions that our investigators will be looking into.
Glenn Page says his son was supposed to be out with the teen Saturday night, but decided to go to the family cottage instead.
I've known them all since public school. They have really good kids and a good tight group of friends. That's why it's sad to see.
The teens went to Brock High School. The Durham District School Board saying in a statement that reads in part, "We can confirm this tragic event involves DDSB students and that supports are in place at the school for students, families and staff, thinking of those directly impacted. A tragic event that has left an entire community in shock."
It's beyond words, really. And what are kids doing that time of night driving around like that with seven kids in a pickup?
Police haven't yet identified the teen who died in the crash, and at this point, no charges have been laid. A candlelight vigil is planned for Wednesday evening at Sunderland Park. Mike Walker, CTV News.
He's accused of horrific crimes, the death of a woman and her two children.
Closing submissions underway at the trial of Corey Fenn in Oshawa. CTV's John Musselman reports.
The court-appointed defense lawyer for accused killer Corey Fenn told the court today that Fenn killed the victims, but there was no intent to do it. In closing submissions, the defense argued that substance abuse was a major driving force, and Fenn was in a state of cocaine psychosis at the time of the killings. The defense suggested Fenn is guilty of the lesser charge of manslaughter, not second-degree murder. The 33-year-old Fenn is accused of killing his former girlfriend and her two children, 39-year-old Chrissy Pechanovsky, and her son Roy and daughter 13-year-old Vanna. It happened in March 2018 at a home in Ajax. The Crown earlier argued Fenn is guilty of three counts of second-degree murder after he went into a rage when his girlfriend ended their relationship. He stabbed Pechanovsky and her daughter. Her son Roy was strangled. The accused in this case is representing himself, but he didn't call any witnesses or evidence, saying only that he didn't have the mental capacity to commit this crime. Now, the court appointed a defense lawyer to present the closing arguments. During that time, Fenn lay down in the prisoner's box and put his feet up. Fenn has pleaded not guilty to three counts of second-degree murder. The judge will hand down his decision on January the 21st. John Musselman, CTV News in Oshawa.
And still to come, our detective series re-examining the deaths of two tourists inside a Toronto hotel and the peculiar clues left behind that made an impression on the investigator who helped solve the case.
They have been at the center of so much heartbreak over the pandemic. Long-term care homes struggling amid fatal outbreaks.
And tonight, critics say some operators are being rewarded despite allegations of severe shortcomings. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
Kathy Parks misses her dad terribly. A resident of Orchard Villa, the 86-year-old was one of 70 who died in one of Ontario's worst COVID-19 outbreaks at a long-term care home.
I get upset and I tend to relive it. And nobody wants to go through thinking of a loved one like that.
Parks is shocked. The province is looking at renewing the home's license for another 30 years and allowing it to expand with 87 more beds.
I don't understand it. It's not logical to me. There's a large group of families from Orchard Villa that are currently pursuing lawsuits because of what happened there. And we haven't even had that resolved yet.
Southbridge Care Homes, which runs Orchard Villa, says it's been making changes since the pandemic began. And a redeveloped home would support infection prevention and control and enable electronic monitoring for contact tracing. We take all concerns regarding our home seriously, including those expressed by the families and the Canadian Armed Forces report, the company said in a statement. Already, the province has allocated more than 700 new spaces and close to 1,100 redeveloped spaces at some of Southbridge's other facilities. The province has also approved new spaces for other operators in Ontario where the military highlighted concerns.
And I think this really demonstrates a glaring lapse of judgment by our government by doling out 25 to 30 years. Keep in mind, these are generational bed licenses. This is going to impact an entire generation of our future seniors and persons with disabilities in these facilities, to potentially continue down a cycle of substandard care.
In a statement, the Ministry of Long-Term Care says the ministry's evaluation process prioritized redevelopment of older homes to implement the lessons learned on improved infection prevention and control measures, particularly the elimination of 3- and 4-bed ward rooms in which isolation and cohorting has proven difficult.
I'm really worried that this sends a message that it's okay to treat long-term care residents however you want, and you'll get away with it.
Park says when there are major problems at a home, licenses should be removed. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
And our multi-platform writer Miriam Katawazi continues her coverage online. She's working on a 5-part series this week, focusing on one company at a time and the potential beds the province has in store for them. That's at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Public Health Ontario is reporting 326 new COVID-19 cases in its most recent update. 231 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 18,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is now sitting at 1.6%.
369 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to 585,000 over the course of the pandemic. No new deaths are linked to the virus today. 9,846 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 39 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 33 in Peel Region. York has 31 new cases. There are 15 in Hamilton. 12 new cases logged in Niagara, with 7 in both Durham and Halton.
Across the province, nearly 87.8% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And nearly 83.9% of eligible people are now considered fully vaccinated. And that represents more than 10.9 million people in Ontario.
More than 800 Toronto public schools will have on-site PCR tests by the end of the week. The test kits will be available in every public school, a first for the province. They can be used if a student has COVID symptoms or if someone in their class tests positive. Once the test is complete, families can drop the samples off at a pop-up testing site or at select schools. A ruling at Canada's Supreme Court is showing you can fight City Hall, with the court saying municipalities are now legally responsible for how they clear snow.
As CTV's John Woodward reports, advocates for people with disabilities hope it will lead to more accessible city streets.
Venturing across snow and ice is hard enough for most people, and doubly so for Allison Brown. She's legally blind and navigates city streets with the help of Ellis, the vision dog. Sometimes the city doesn't make it easy.
We've experienced many situations where the snow is actually blocking the sidewalk. So that becomes a big, number one, stress factor, but makes our ability to maneuver very, very challenging.
A 28-year-old nurse in Nelson, B.C. fell and injured herself while trying to climb a snowbank that was put on a sidewalk by city snowplow. She sued the city. The case was dismissed at trial because cities aren't liable for most policy decisions, including where and how they clear snow. But on appeal to the Supreme Court of Canada, the court found the city could be held responsible for how those policy decisions are carried out.
This case is more far-reaching than simply snow removal cases, which is what's so significant about it.
Personal injury lawyer Melissa Miller says the decision can apply to other things a city does or doesn't do.
A pothole that isn't filled in downtown Toronto that bottoms out your car and causes you a significant injury is potentially now the subject of a lawsuit.
Everybody get your house in order. You know, you have a responsibility to make sure that the roads and sidewalks are safe.
The case has people with disabilities watching closely because it has everything to do with the accessibility of city streets.
I hope it's going to make municipalities sit up and take a listen, that they can't just send people out to shovel the snow and then hope they get it right.
Lawyer David Lepofsky says the case may lead to more scrutiny for snow clearing city employees and snow clearing robots being tested right now in Ontario.
It doesn't really make me feel any better. The big issue is clear the snow.
Brown and Ellis are hoping this winter things will be better. John Woodward, CTV News.
We turn now to the fight for control of Rogers Communications, which has taken a bizarre turn.
The company now has two boards, with each one saying the other is illegitimate. CTV's Heather Butts reports.
The drama playing out at Rogers resembles that of a TV show. Family members fighting for control of the company, with the latest twist taking place last night.
We've seen lots of shareholder disputes. This one takes the cake so far.
Edward Rogers, who was ousted as chair of the board last week, held a meeting Sunday night with five new board members he appointed and says he was elected as chair.
He says it's all completely legitimate. His sisters and his mother and other members of the what is now, in some people's minds, the older board of directors of Rogers say the whole thing is a sham. It's completely illegal.
The fight first began when Edward tried to remove the company's CEO, Joe Natale. When Edward was ousted as company chair, he used his position as the head of a family trust to try to reshape the board in his favor.
I don't think that there is any shareholder, securities regulator, or director of a corporate statute across this country that would find this approach acceptable.
The feud became even more public, with one sister issuing a rash of tweets over the weekend. Martha Rogers saying this should be taken as seriously as if he appointed himself the King of England. But Edward is vowing to go to the BC Supreme Court to have the decision verified.
A single shareholder being able to replace all the independent directors of one of the largest public companies in the country with a stroke of a pen one afternoon is unconscionable.
This all comes in the middle of a multi-billion dollar deal to merge with Shaw Communications. Both Rogers and Shaw shares are down with uncertainty.
The longer this lingers, share price depression will occur, and the risk of the three regulators approving the Shaw-Rogers transaction without conditions goes down.
A lawyer representing one of the Rogers family members says he's confident a resolution will be reached around the kitchen table before proceeding to court. But some experts believe it may be best to put this in the hands of a judge. Heather Butts, CTV News, Toronto.
The U.S. has detailed new COVID-19 requirements for international travelers. Beginning November 8th, adults traveling to the United States will have to be fully vaccinated. All vaccines authorized for use in Canada will be accepted. Mixing and matching of approved shots will be permitted. Travelers will also need to be tested for COVID-19 before boarding for their flight to the U.S., and airlines will be required to collect passenger information in case there is a need for contact tracing.
Bad weather prevented a salvage crew from boarding a cargo ship off the coast of BC today. The blaze aboard the MV Zim Kingston continues to smolder. At least 10 containers caught fire on Friday, and another 40 fell into the water. Efforts to recover them are being hampered by the windstorm. At least two are carrying hazardous materials, but the Coast Guard says there's no threat to people in the Victoria area. The Greek-based ship was evacuated on Saturday. Five remained on board to fight the fire. A warning about the disturbing details in this next story, our detective series revisiting some of the crimes that shocked the city.
Tonight, the horrific 2006 double murder inside a downtown hotel and the clues that helped crack the case. CTV's Austin Delaney is live on Girard with more. Austin.
This was a real whodunit when it happened. There were three tourists found dead in the hotel behind me. The city was worried there was a tourist killer on the loose and tarnishing this city's good reputation.
The 19th floor of the Delta Chelsea Hotel, as it was known in September of 2006, was covered in blood. A trail of it leading investigators from the elevator where the first body was found to the crime scene in room 1908.
By far the worst I'd ever seen. Walking into that scene looked like you were walking into, you know, not to sound so cliche here, but looked like you're walking into a movie, a horror film.
CP24's crime analyst Steve Ryan was then the Toronto homicide detective leading the investigation into the discovery of three dead Swiss tourists. The male by the elevator was naked, the wall by the elevator bloodied.
He was trying to hit the button, you could tell, and he missed quite a few times because his fingerprint was all around the down button, but it did not hit the button. So you get that impression that he was panicking, trying to hit that down button to get away from whoever was attacking him.
Another male and female were found dead in the room. Ryan would soon learn the two in the room were friends and had booked a cross-Canada tour. But he harbored feelings for her, but she did not for him. The man by the elevator was the woman's new boyfriend, and they were all sharing the same room.
He could not stand the fact that he believed that there was intimacy going on in the other bed. He was in his bed, and that started the letter to his mother with regards to just how lousy he felt about the whole thing.
Ryan believes he put the letter down and then stabbed the two. The coroner ruled it a double murder-suicide, but Ryan does not think the killer had the nerve to plunge the knife into his own chest. Instead, there were 30 to 40 small nicks on his chest.
What the guy didn't realize is that as he was doing these hesitation moves, he nicked the top of his own heart. It caused him to bleed out, but bleed out slowly. And I don't suspect that he had any idea what was happening.
The former investigator believes the killer thought he would wait in the bed for police to come after the first body was discovered by the elevator. Instead, he killed himself, quite by accident.
And in my latest episode of The Detective, a podcast with Steve Ryan released today, Ryan goes into much more detail how he solved the crime before Toronto's safe city reputation was ruined. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, thank you, Austin. And you can subscribe to The Detective on iHeart or wherever you listen to podcasts. New episodes are released every Monday. And you can visit our website for more details from the investigations.
Still ahead, her psoriasis was so painful, she feared starting a family. The extent at which women suffering from chronic inflammatory diseases are delaying motherhood.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, the battle between Ontario and its optometrists has been dragging on for almost 2 months. It means millions of children and seniors can't get eye appointments, and some are getting worried about their eyesight. I'll have an update. That's just ahead.
After overnight low of 6 degrees and showers, you won't be able to ditch your rain gear for tomorrow because we'll be 10 degrees with showers and gusty winds out of the north, sometimes up to 50 kilometers an hour. And rain continuing through the day tomorrow, particularly heavy east of the city in the Kingston area. We should see another 5 to 10 as we get through the day tomorrow. I'm going to tell you what else you can expect in your 7-day forecast, including a look ahead to Halloween.
The dispute between optometrists and the province is nearing the 2-month mark, meaning almost 4 million people still have no access to eye tests.
Patients with vision issues are concerned, and some say they're traveling to Quebec or the U.S. to get their eyes tested. Pat Foran has an update on Consumer Alert. Pat.
I do, Nathan and Michelle. Thank you. Optometrists in Ontario say they're the lowest paid in Canada. The government has given them $39 million and offered a raise of 8.5%, but eye doctors say it's not enough, and the two sides remain far apart.
I have not had my eyes tested for just about 2 years.
Don Brooks of Caledon is 66 years old. Anyone who is over 65, under 20, or has certain eye conditions is currently not able to get an eye test due to a dispute between optometrists and the Ontario government.
Normally, I've been having my eyes tested every year because my mother had a history of glaucoma and macular degeneration.
As the work stoppage nears the 2-month mark, some Ontario patients are traveling to Quebec and the U.S. to have their eyes tested.
I said I might end up having to go to the U.S. and get my eye test there and get my new prescription. And that's what they said. Well, if you have to, you have to.
The Ontario Association of Optometrists said it's disappointed the dispute has not been resolved yet and blames the government for the stalemate.
We're sitting here and waiting for them to come back to us and establish some terms of engagement.
Optometrists say Ontario currently pays about $44 for an eye exam, which the group says covers only about half the cost. The province did give optometrists $39 million and offered an 8.5% raise. On Friday, the premier asked optometrists to get back to negotiating.
As premier, I'm asking you, please come to the table. The only people you're hurting are the people of Ontario. So I want a deal done.
The association said for the premier to get involved offers a glimmer of hope a deal can be reached.
I'm glad that he's finally acknowledging that this is an issue for him and his government.
The province has said it is willing to give optometrists more funding to help cover their operating costs, but said it won't hand over a blank check. And some patients say they're willing to pay for their eye exams, but that's not allowed. In Ontario, patients can't pay for a service that is covered by OHIP. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
All right, today one of those days, gray, wet weather.
We got that special weather statement in effect. Michelle, as long as we don't have this for Halloween, I think people will be okay.
We'll take a look ahead to the seven-day forecast, Michelle and Nathan, in just a bit. So far, things are looking pretty good temperature-wise and sky condition-wise. So there's a glimmer of hope there for Halloween, and I'm hoping the same as you. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a Trane. So temperature-wise, we've been relatively steady today. We got to 10 degrees downtown today. We're at 7 at Pearson Airport at the moment, 7 in Trenton, 10 in Windsor, 5 in Muskoka. Hanging in onto cooler temperatures in the eastern or northeastern portions of southern and eastern Ontario. Now, we are under a special weather statement here in the GTA and really all these areas in yellow. Where we're looking at overall totals since early this morning. It started in the GTA around 1 o'clock of 30 to 50 millimeters of rain. There has been a rainfall warning in effect for the Windsor area and Sarnia, 40 to 60 total. That's really tapering off a fair bit there. And I anticipate that these will be dropped later on, but we're still dealing with a fair bit of rain, heaviest to the north of the GTA in a line from Kincardine over towards the Innisfil area right now. And I'm eyeing eastern Ontario for being particularly heavy later on. But we have this rainfall right now in the city of Toronto, the area of low pressure moving through, and that's bringing a lot of moisture and some gusty winds with it as well. We've had wind gusts, you know, in the 50 kilometer an hour range, sustained up to 30 kilometers an hour in the last little while. And that's going to stay with us through the overnight period and into tomorrow. So we get a little bit of clearing, and then as we get into the morning tomorrow, we have more showers on the way. Tomorrow's about 5 to 10 millimeters of rain, except for if you're east of the city of Toronto, and that's where things are going to be heavier. And then as we get into Wednesday, some really nice clearing. It's actually a great day on the way for Wednesday and looking good for Thursday as well. So that's good news. Overnight tonight, 6 degrees with those showers and the gusty north winds. Tomorrow, a high of 10 degrees. And as we look into the 7-day forecast, there's the nice weather as we get Wednesday into Thursday with highs of 13 and 12. As we get towards the weekend, unsettled, some showers, but clearing for Sunday and 12. Stay with us. We have lots more to talk about after the break.
More than 1 million Canadians live with chronic inflammatory diseases. Conditions like psoriasis, for example, can be painful and affect many components of a person's life.
And for some, that even includes decisions like whether or not to have children. Our health reporter, Pauline Chan, has more.
Sarah Murray is due to have her second child in February.
I was diagnosed with psoriasis when I was about 8 years old.
Her particular type is called raindrop psoriasis, small spots covering every part of her body.
It's very painful, it's very itchy.
And she used to worry about starting a family.
To be honest, when I was younger, I never wanted to have children because of my psoriasis, and I never wanted my child to have to go through what I went through.
A recent survey found that more than 43% of women with a chronic inflammatory disease like psoriasis delayed having children. Many worried about passing their condition to their child. Others feared their health wasn't good enough to go through pregnancy.
And so we actually consider psoriasis not as just a skin disease, but it's a systemic inflammatory disease. And up to a third or even up to 40% of patients who have psoriasis will have a condition called psoriatic arthritis. That's inflammation of the joint.
Having psoriasis also puts patients at high risk of developing diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and more.
There are some medications that are not safe to use when you're pregnant and nursing even.
Psoriasis itself can cause some complications for pregnant women and their babies, such as preterm delivery. But some new medications can greatly reduce the risks for mother and baby. Advantage Hers is a global campaign offering support for women living with chronic inflammatory diseases.
Usually they speak to their family doctor and their obstetrician. They don't think to bring it up to their dermatologist.
Almost 40% of women with chronic inflammatory diseases don't feel they get enough information or support around family planning, so taking the initiative is important. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Alec Baldwin's wife is offering support to the family of Helena Hutchins. The cinematographer was accidentally shot and killed by the actor on set last week. Hilaria Baldwin says, "My heart is with Helena, her husband, her son, their family and loved ones, and my Alec. It's said there are no words because it's impossible to express the shock and heartache of such a tragic accident. Heartbreak, loss, support." Production of the movie has been suspended at least until the investigation into Hutchins' death is complete. He was called the seventh friend.
Well, you know him as Gunther, the actor whose character Pine for Rachel has died. CTV's Andrea Case joins us with that story. Andrea.
Nathan and Michelle, good evening. Yes, actor, musician, cancer awareness activist, and husband, James Michael Tyler. He was the star of the show. I guess he wasn't the big star of the show, but he made a lasting impression, and for that, he's being remembered today.
I just have to tell you, I love you.
After years of hoping, finally a declaration of love. This was the scene Jennifer Aniston posted today on Instagram in memory of her Friends co-star, James Michael Tyler. For 10 seasons, the actor played the hapless Gunther. Adding, Friends would not have been the same without you. Thank you for the laughter you brought to the show and all of our lives. You will be so missed. The actor died at home in L.A. this past weekend of prostate cancer. In 2018, he was 56 when the disease was discovered during a routine physical, which included a PSA test. A safe reading is 0 to 2.5. His results came back at 654. On the Today Show in June, he said it had progressed.
Well, for my specific prognosis, it's, of course, a stage 4. Late-stage cancer. So eventually, you know, it's going to probably get me.
Tyler was the sarcastic blonde-haired manager at the Central Perk coffee shop.
I was wondering if you'd like to go to a movie with me sometime.
Many related to his lovelorn character, and he got a warm welcome when he appeared on the Friends reunion show earlier this year via Zoom. Illness prevented him from attending in person. By then, the cancer had mutated, causing fractures in his bones and spreading to his spine, paralyzing his lower body, and he could no longer walk. He said his goal was to see his 59th birthday. He passed that milestone in May. After that, he said it was to help save lives by sharing his story and encouraging men to get a PSA test.
And when I'm in a cafe having coffee, or I see a man with hair brighter than the sun, I'll think of you.
Tyler said he wished he'd listened to his wife and gone to the doctor earlier. Now, 1 in 8 men in Canada will be diagnosed with prostate cancer. The Canadian Prostate Cancer Foundation recommends men start screening at age 45 or age 40 if you have family history of prostate, other cancers, or if you are African-Canadian. Reporting live, I'm Andrea Case. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thank you, Andrea. Prince's home state says he should receive one of America's highest civilian honors. Minnesota's congressional delegation is introducing a resolution to posthumously award the Congressional Gold Medal to the pop superstar. State officials say it would honor Prince's memory and contributions as a composer, performer, and music innovator. Past recipients include George Washington, Rosa Parks, and Mother Teresa.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
This is a wake-up call. We are all impacted by the gun violence, and we're all involved and must be involved in providing the proper solutions.
Updating our top stories, police have identified two more victims of deadly shootings over the weekend. 73-year-old taxi driver Christopher Young was shot and killed in his own cab last night. Meanwhile, 24-year-old Mateo Yucahana was shot and killed inside his vehicle in a plaza near Weston Road and Highway 401 on Saturday. The pair were among four people killed in fatal shootings just this weekend.
We're ready. You know, everybody's been coming to the gym already for months now, and I mean, I'm comfortable with it. I'm ready.
Business owners were ready for a rush of customers as capacity limits were lifted at businesses which require proof of vaccination. It's the first step in the province's gradual reopening plan.
I think it's premature to set arbitrary dates. I think those dates should be determined by what the science is telling us.
Critics say the first steps of reopening may have come too soon, as public health measures have been effective at slowing virus transmission. Others say imposing a timeline for when those measures will be lifted could hinder Ontario's vaccination efforts.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 13 basis points to 80.73 U.S. American benchmark oil was unchanged at 83.76. And the TSX Composite Index gained 68 points to close at a new high of 21,284.
In the UK, a former Facebook data scientist told Parliament today she doubts Instagram can be made safe for children.
Facebook's own research says now the bullying follows children home. It goes into their bedrooms. The last thing they see at night is someone being cruel to them. The first thing they see in the morning is a hateful statement. And that is just so much worse.
Frances Haugen also told lawmakers Facebook fails to protect children from harmful content and stokes online hate and extremism. She says the company lacks any incentive to fix its problems. Haugen testified on Capitol Hill earlier this month. It's an idea already gaining attention. The rules aimed at helping workers achieve a better work-life balance.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair and Lena Latifat. Lena, you'll be taking a closer look at this issue.
Yeah, Nathan, you know, workplace burnout, checking emails before and after work, taking calls before and after work. For so many who've been working from home during this pandemic, this is their reality. And the province is really hoping to tackle this issue, hoping to introduce a right to disconnect from work law. Sounds great if you're an employee, right? But how would it actually work? And how would it be enforced in the workplace? That discussion coming up on CB24 tonight.
And Reshmi, you're also chatting with beloved Hazel McCallion about a new art exhibit dedicated to her life and career.
Yes, Michelle, we will try to fit the art exhibit into 36 years of her career as mayor of Mississauga. Hazel McCallion, Hurricane Hazel, joining us live on CB24 tonight. Join us for that conversation.
All right. Thank you, Reshmi and Lena. And don't forget, CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. Millions of Canadians will soon be proudly wearing a poppy leading up to Remembrance Day.
The annual national fundraising campaign for veterans was launched today. Governor General Mary Simon received the first poppy during a ceremony at Rideau Hall. Poppies will be available to the general public starting this Friday. The Royal Canadian Legion is again releasing a digital poppy, which can be shared with friends and family through social media. Funds raised during the poppy campaign go to programs and services for veterans. This year marks the 100th anniversary of the flower being adopted as a symbol of remembrance.
All right, Michelle, what can we expect tonight?
6 degrees overnight with showers and gusty winds out of the north. We're still under a special weather statement in the city of Toronto, 30 to 50 millimeters total. It's probably another 5 to 10 tonight. And as we get into the day tomorrow, winds do stay on the gustier side out of the north again, 30 to 50 kilometers an hour, another 5 or so millimeters of rain. And then we get some nice clearing for Wednesday and Thursday with seasonal or above temperatures. And then rain returns for the end of the week. Back to you.
Thanks for giving us a heads up. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.